Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 24 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. There's a lot of stuff going on. I think with production being back in session, there's
Finally, definitely a lot more stuff coming back from the set, for sure.
I know that, I think this is the first picture that I've seen Lotte Fabique provide.
Oh,
She posted a picture of, it looks like her little name signage from the table read session.
Like her place setting or something.
Has her name on it.
And the Galus.
Galus, that's right. Lots of pictures coming out though this week from Diana herself. She spent, you know, a lot of time on the set and doing a lot of interviews. So, and as we said last week, she was taking over the Outlander Stars Instagram account. So there were a lot of pictures posted by her. And she also posted a lot of things on her personal Facebook site. She had, basically, it seems like a good documentation of her time spent there. Like, she's got pictures of her going to dinner.
Like, she had nothing else to do. Right. Poor girl. She didn't have a lot of time. I mean, she's in the same, I don't know. Arizona does not do daylight savings time. But for all intents and purposes, they're only, I think right now, there's a 1 hour difference. I could be wrong. At some point during the year, there's a 1 hour difference between California and Arizona when we have it. When we don't have it, we're on the same time zone thing. Anyway, she would have essentially the same type of jet lag that we would should we travel there. And I know for me, jet lag, it is awful. It takes me on that kind of change. It takes me like at least a week to function. It is awful. It's not fun. Eight or 9 hours.
I mean,
maybe
you
she
know
was
it,
so
though,
busy that she once, didn't, once in her Diet Coke.
Once you've surpassed like 5 or 6 hours, and they're all, it all sucks. I mean, adding one more hour onto it is really irrelevant.
It does. And I guess that, look, it's also Scotland. It's also Outlander. And she has so many, I mean this in a positive way. There are, as she describes in some of her writings, there are so many handlers. They have drivers. They are watched like a hawk, right? As to make sure that they're at the right place at the right time. That, yes, I mean, I'm sure she has to, like, take care of her necessaries. But they're there to support her to make sure she gets where she needs to be.
Right. So, I need someone like that.
I know, huh? We need
How much
just someone.
They cost?
I don't know. I don't think they sell them. Oh, no, we can't sell. That would be a slave. No, that's not good.
That's not what I mean. I don't want to own them. I mean, but
you want
know,
them
pay
to take
them
care
salary.
Of themselves.
It could come in handy. How many times have we missed our alarms in the morning?
Oh, my gosh.
So she's gone out to dinner. She's documented that. She documented the inside of her trailer. She documented, it seemed like the first time that she was on set, she posted a picture of her in the makeup chair. They've done her hair with these wonderful curls and really light, normal, you know, natural looking makeup. But that's not really set. It wasn't like her getting, it was like they were just like, oh, let's just do your hair.
That was for the day that she was doing all the interviews. It was the press day.
Press day. I need someone. I need one of those too. I need a full set of people at my house to get me ready in the morning. I'd look so much better at work. They'd appreciate me better. Lots of backstage pictures where you just kind of look at stuff and you're like, what is that? I mean, that's a light.
Just seeing that light and how bright it is makes my skin hurt. Because we've been on in productions where you know how much light is on you. And that's just a stage.
No, and she was talking about how hot it was. Well, first of all, they're dressed with like layers and layers and layers. Oh. Authentic layers of clothing, mind you. And then they're
the layers and the weight.
Right.
And all then, of that together.
And then they're going on to these
and
sets.
And the wigs. Oh, my
where
gosh.
They've got,
your head can't breathe.
Right. You go on these sets where they've got hundreds and hundreds of these like
candles.
Lights fixed.
Yes, and I think they
fixed
burning,
on them that have like
too.
the heat of the sun pointing at them from all different directions. It's not a wonder they're hot. Though it must be a nice change to being freezing outside.
Mm. And then there was the catapult.
It's not a catapult.
I know it's not a catapult. But my first thought was, it's a catapult. I'm like, no, it's not a catapult. It's another. It's a something on a track. I guess it's for a film. excuse me, for a camera, but it's at a slant, and this might be a mic, or that might be a camera.
I think it's one of those ones where they can lower the camera, and yes. so they can get those shots that kind of come down over and kind of zoom in and get a glance of things. They have pictures of what looks like a waiting area with all the seats with their names on them, which is cute. I do like the Jack Frank. Like he doesn't already have enough of an identity crisis.
Oh, and this is funny. I don't see Jamie there. He's probably over here somewhere, but we see Jack Frank, Claire, Rupert, Angus, mm-hmm. and then blank, and then blank. Or we don't know what's on the other side here. I am surprised that Claire is not sandwiched between Jack Frank and Jamie. She looked, mm-hmm. in this shot of her walking down, I'm guessing it says she's in a tour with Rondi Moore is giving her a tour. She looks like she's just delighted.
That look on her face. She looks like she's going, ooh.
Exactly.
And of course, Ron is back in his kilt.
I wonder if he wears a kilt every day. Or just for the camera because it was press day or something.
Well, that looks like a fancy kilt. It's got pockets.
Yeah, it does.
Very comfortable. Yeah. And then it looks like she's standing near a cleft in some stones. Those must be the stones from the standing stone that they've got in some sort of a warehouse is what it looks like to me with her pictured next to them.
And I love... She's always so... She's classy anyway, no matter what. But I love the way she dresses. She's very... I mean, okay, you could say she's modest in how she dresses. Whatever. But it's very... And I think I've read her writing about how she dresses. She wears lots of jewel tones and lots of kind of drapey stuff.
She wears lots of long...
Yes.
Long, like, coat, long, blousy, flowing garments. Tops and garments.
Yes, yeah. especially tops, yeah, because, like, I think she has jeans on. Mm-hmm. Jeans. She has pants on here, but...
No disrespect, but from this picture, it kind of looks like a big poncho.
It kind of does look like a poncho.
Like a fancy Southwestern pretty. Poncho mm-hmm. in jewel tones. And if you have been paying attention to Diana's site, she has posted a lot of really interesting, like, kind of blog posts about her time spent on set.
Very detailed.
Very detailed.
Lovely, long, luscious descriptions.
Though, to be honest, I would expect nothing less from Diana.
From a writer?
From Diana, from her. Especially considering her books.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
So if she had literally just been like, hey, I'm on set, it was cool, bye, I would have probably been disappointed. But they're very verbose and very Diana.
But not just verbose for the sake of being verbose. She tells us so many interesting tidbits that you can really think that you're in the room. And it just, it's like, it's the best thing besides us. And there's so many fans, there's no way, obviously, we could ever do this. And they would never let, you know, a ton of fans do this anyway. But
if you want us, stars, we'll be there in an instant.
You need to stop that. Anyway, it was just so, as do her books. Reading her writing puts you there. And just reading this, knowing that it's not a story, knowing that this is actually happening, she's describing her experience, it puts you there. And really, it made me, because I've been involved in theater and, I almost said film, no, not film, theater, I guess theater, basically. That's it. Same a lot again. Of theater.
Theater.
Theater, opera, which is still a form of theater, though. So theater.
Oh my gosh. Y'all, she did theater.
I did a little bit of theater. Anyway, no, I've been in performing, theater. But I've never, stop it. We've never done any type of film work.
I have.
You've been in film?
I've done some stuff.
Oh, so we'll have to talk about this later because she hasn't shared this. My point is, neither of us have been in this type of production. And reading about the whole thing, and I know one of the things we can attest to, well, I can, is the whole wig process. The putting your hair up, my hair is nowhere near as long and thick as Diana's, but shoulder length, it doesn't matter, but putting it up in, you know, tiny little curlicues with bobby pins and then covering it with the net.
They did them with braids. Oh, they did all these braids for anchors.
Yeah, and they didn't, when they showed me, in the show that I was in, then I had to wear, I was Rapunzel, so that was a wig, y'all. That was the wig down, like, to the ground. When I had that wig, I just did, like, little curlicues. No one ever, I was not treated that nicely. They just said, here, you do this and you do this. Ready? Go. Here's a makeup sheet. Make your face look like this.
No, I did shows where I had to wear multiple wigs and use my hair.
Oh.
And I had to go from wig to wig to wig, so it was like I'd come off stage and I couldn't have my hair in braids or little buns or whatever. Yeah. So I'd have to literally just shove it under a wig cap and then throw the wig on. Now, granted,
and you
used
your own hair too? Oh gosh.
I mean, granted, no, there weren't any obscene close-ups, and everyone knows it's a wig, so it's not like it's supposed to be, you know, 100% natural looking. So it was fine for the purpose, but
Really, that was about it. I mean, it was a, there's a lot of stuff coming off a set right now, and just paying attention to what's coming out. But it's been a really good week, I thought.
It's been a really fun, fun-filled week. It's been a fun week and a great week. And not just, you know, shots from Outlander stars, yes, and the shots that she shared on her Facebook page, Diana, but also people like Jolie Lash from Access Hollywood and others who were some of the media who were there for this event, this media day, this press day. And while they were in the UK, they took pictures, you know, for their own trips. And so there were so many great shots, not just from stars or from Diana, but from others who were there. So it was really a very nice week.
And now on to the read-along. Chapter 19, The Water Horse. Which I think it's ironic that we're even bothering with this chapter because they've made it quite clear that they're not going to be doing this.
Yeah, they're not, but we're doing a read-along of the book and not of what we think is going to be included. What we know is going to be included.
I know, but you know, we're also discussing how we think things might
show up on
screen or how things might be interpreted.
But this is not going to be.
But this will not be in the show at all. So,
and I know we haven't discussed it yet, but after reading this or while reading this, I completely understand that it is something, if there's anything that can be easily dropped, it's this. Of course, there's another plot device or another person who helps with the later on.
Yeah.
Another thing that can be used, that already in the book can be used in place of the person who's here. But just reading this reminded me, it's another time. She does not have very many of these times, at least in this book. They're few and far between, but they do happen. It's another moment where Claire recognizes someone or something that is maybe a type of kindred spirit. Something or someone that is out of their time.
It's true, but what I will say about that, as far as this is concerned, this would be the hardest one for her to play as an actress. Because all of this entire scene, most of it happens inside of her head. Oh, so yeah. All of the reasonings that she has inside of her head would only really make sense. You can't translate that to just like talking to the screen monster. Because she's not going to say all of that out loud. I mean, she could, but it would be even more awkward. And then if she did do it out loud, then Peter the Drover would have heard literally everything.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to it. So just to say it now so we don't have to address it at all, there's no tally change in this chapter. The setting is stated in the first sentence. We camped the next night on the banks above Loch Ness.
Claire, well, that's not foreshadowing.
Yeah, no kidding. Claire had an odd feeling, seeing it again, seeing the lock again, and so little had changed, or she corrected in her thoughts, so little would change, right, since she was in the past and not in the future. The man and the horses seemed to feel strange about the place as well. Claire goes down to the lock to wash her face and hands before supper. She was alone, and she describes it as very peaceful. We're also given more evidence of her status change since she'd married Jamie. She wasn't watched or followed all the time like she had been. She picks some seeds from a tree and is tossing them onto the surface of the loch, and she notices waves against the rocks. And then, and I will quote a few lines here, a great flat head broke... That reminds me of a screw.
A flat head screwdriver.
Sorry. screwdriver.
Great Phillips head.
No.
Broke the surface.
That would be scary. And in the 18th century, I would scream.
Giant Phillips screwdriver.
A great flat head broke the surface not 10 feet away. Some water beast, and she could see some, quote, dark and massive movement. Movement? Where's my consonants? Oh like my gosh. Let's try that again. Dark and massive movement beneath the surface, unquote. End quote. Unquote. Okay. She was still and not afraid. A line I found particularly poignant was, quote, oddly enough, I was not really afraid. I felt some faint kinship with it, a creature further from its own time than I. End quote. And there was a sense of familiarity mingled with its unreality.
She describes the beautiful creature and how different it was from the, quote, monster replicas she'd seen in her own time. And if you've been to Scotland, and or I should say Loch Ness, and you've done the tour or you've gone into the gift shop, you don't even have to have gone to Scotland. You could you've seen YouTube movies from the 40s or whatever, you know, or, you know, seen dummies and replicas or whatever that people make. We know exactly what she's talking about. Then the creature sank below and disappeared. Claire realizes she must have moved forward to see the creature, for she finds herself on one of the rock slabs that went into the water. She's in a different position than she was when she had first seen it. She says goodbye to the creature. She turns back to the bank and sees a man at the top of it. She recognized him as Peter the Drover. He had also come to get water. Peter went pale, drops his bucket, and falls to his knees and crosses himself. "Have mercy, lady," he says to Claire. And he stays down, even though she's telling him to get up. She's like, "You stupid man, just get up. Come on now." And she fills his bucket for him, and they make their way back to the camp. He's following her. Since it seemed that he was not going to be telling anyone what happened, Claire did not mention it either.
I wonder if she had mentioned it,
if he would have spoken up.
Right, or if that would have negated the whole thing later.
Yeah, and unfortunately we can't say quite yet what that is, but I know what you're saying. Yeah. It's okay, we can allude to it a little bit.
I mean, his whole purpose. I don't even think there's going to be a Peter the Drover.
No, there's probably...
There's no... I mean, there might... I don't think anyone will have the name Peter the Drover. There might be somebody
in the... There might be a Peter somewhere, but...
Sure, but this... His sole purpose in this book is to fulfill this one role. That's the only time... There's only two times he's mentioned.
That's true. And also, someone reminded me on Twitter last week, recently, that although that's true, leaving this out will take him out, mm-hmm. and that's his purpose. He's probably truly not needed, because another story, which we haven't gotten to yet, the Changeling, that's not going to give too much away. If someone doesn't know what that is, they don't know what it is. But that story enough, the testimony of the woman who saw the mother of the baby, yeah, right, which comes in a few chapters, that testimony was likely enough to...
Have we not forgotten the priest guy who shows up with the pack of wild dogs?
Oh, see, then there's more. So we don't even know. There's plenty. Peter the Drover. Okay,
and that's what I had forgotten. I know, but when Peter the Drover gives his confession or whatever, everyone laughs at him.
Yeah.
So he was ineffective.
Yeah, it was not needed.
Yes, he was unnecessary. They did not need him.
So forget we mentioned anything about a changeling, and forget we mentioned anything in the future. Well, and we still haven't said what that thing is, which is good. We're not giving it away. But
I mean, let's be honest. Everyone don't say it. Everyone who is listening to this has read the book.
Well, we don't know that. That's why we're not saying.
I know. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that the odds are pretty great that anyone listening to this has read the whole book.
The only hint I'm going to give is I have
an itch. I thought we weren't going to say anything.
I have an itch. That's it. I have an itch.
We're not going to say anything.
I'm not saying anything. I have an itch.
Your hints are unnecessary.
I'm not hinting. I have an itch. Let me scratch it.
You do not.
I do. Right there. Okay.
That's not even a real itch. I've seen you scratch before and it didn't look like that.
Okay. So, I guess there's not too much more to talk about this chapter, since it's not going to be... These events will not be in there. Oh, well, no. The whole reason I wanted to... This scene, or this chapter, Claire meeting... I mean, it's so short, right? This chapter is like less than 3 pages. Fewer than 3 pages long, depending on which version of the book you have. It's so brief, but so much... And you're right. It was in her mind and in her thoughts. So much is mentioned or encapsulated in what she is thinking, that I just... It's not... The events that happen in this chapter are not sad. But that encounter, to me, is bittersweet. Just thinking about her being out of her time and this creature, you know, potentially being out of its time in the future, or in her new now, in air quotes. It was kind of a... Maybe not bittersweet. I still think poignant is one of the best words for this. It was a beautiful creature, misunderstood, out of place, out of time. And like her, a beautiful woman, out of place, out of time, misunderstood. And The thing is, she could be understood, but if she tried to explain herself, she'd likely be hung or burned. Anyway, so, yeah. Nothing huge happens in this chapter, but...
Well, not since they cut it out.
Well,
I mean, if they hadn't cut it out, it would have been a huge monster.
I'm talking about the book, not the movie. Okay, fine. A movie. Excuse me. Ooh, don't say that. The series. Yeah. Nothing hugely important happens here, but I really felt for the Beast. That's it.
So because chapter 19 was so brief, we decided to double up this week and cover two chapters. So on to chapter 20, Deserted Glades.
The way you started that word, I thought you were going to say desert glades. I'm like, well, no, but that would be nice. Since we're combining these two chapters, I have to find a new title or I have to somehow mush them together. So continuing on their way to the rendezvous with Horrocks.
Horrocks.
Horrocks. I don't know. Horrocks. Horrocks.
Well, he is an English deserter, so it's probably true, so they don't roll the Horrocks.
Maybe. Claire wakens in the night to find Jamie gone, but in the morning he is there, as is a small parcel, within which was encapsulated a dragonfly. And one of the faces of the chunk had been polished, and on the paper that it was wrapped in had been written, or scrawled, something in Latin. And we learn that Human Roe had been a schoolmaster. Which makes me even more sad for that character. He seems to be such a lovable, especially for what he's gone through. My goodness, happy guy, and a good fellow. That to lose his tongue and have all that stuff done to him, or especially the tongue part though, no longer able to use his craft to teach. So we find out that he had been a schoolmaster. The lines were from Catullus, and this is another.
I've always read that Catullus, but
Catullus? Sure,
I know that's going to be wrong. I'm just saying in my brain when I read it in the book, always see a Catullus.
Someone can let us know if either of us are right or wrong, because I could be wrong. I think it's Catullus, but I'd have to ask my my classicist friend, who is not here in Pod Studio right now, so we're not going to call her this late at night. But this is not only from one of his famous poems, but also famous from the book, Outlander, because it has been... written on the inside of Claire's ring, no?
Yes.
Or some ring. Oh,
would you like to see?
Summer's taking off her ring right now.
It's just the...
Just da, da mi basia mille?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So da mi basia mille is give me 1,000 kisses. Or 1,000 kisses. And, I mean, there's more than just that. So Summer just took off her Claire's ring and read a little bit of... Or showed me the inside of it. And yes, it is. It's on the inside of the... The new Claire's ring, right? Not the original. Okay.
Well, it is if you pay.
Oh, I see. And Jamie blushes and he says what it's from, that it's Latin. He talks about the poem. And Claire remarks that it's a bit more high class than your usual fortune cookie. And this is one of her 20th century-isms that confuses Jamie. And those are some of my favorite parts of Diana's writing.
Mm.
We find out that Human Roe did arrange a new place for Horrocks and Jamie to meet. He doesn't trust Horrocks, but having Dougal there will help things, safety-wise. And we also find out that Dougal shot Jamie. And Jamie's quite just, like, matter-of-fact about it. Like, oh, yeah, it was Dougal. And the reason we know this is because of he knows who was in front of him and who was behind him and which direction the bullet came from.
Well, he did say it was probably Dougal, but it could have been...
That's true.
Rupert or...
That's true. And that's actually... What the whole point was is he knew it was not the English because they were coming at him.
Right.
And he felt he knew which direction the bullet came from. So we find out it could have been Dougal or maybe Rupert. Actually, maybe Rupert because Rupert was the best shot.
Mm-hmm.
They were near Fraser Lands and he thought he could take his chances being so close to safety. And the ball that hit him came from behind, so Dougal, Rupert, or Murta would have had to have shot him. Jamie says that though it was one of their bullets that hit him, likely no one wanted him dead. If he died, Lallybroch would have reverted back to the Frasers. And it's a good piece of land on a mountain pass. Now we hear more about not just the fact that it's land, but the strategic location of this land in the event of a potential future uprising. It's a good piece of land on a mountain pass. And he says that come another rising, did I say uprising? I meant rising. Come another rising, they'd want to keep control of it, over it, meaning the McKenzies, or at least his family. So that's why they're willing to help him, Jamie, with Horrocks. As long as he's an outlaw, he can't do much with Lallybroch. And now he tells Claire, Lallybroch will become hers if he's killed.
Yet another reason they were in such a rush to get Jamie married.
Yep. Because it keeps it in
the... Just think, if something happens to Jamie, the McKenzies currently control Claire.
Yeah.
So they could technically make her marry anyone.
And even if Claire didn't want to marry anybody else or do anything with that they said, they're still her best shot. With Jamie gone especially.
Yeah.
Right? She would still trust Dougal probably over other Scots families.
The devil you knows.
Yeah. This is also the first time that we learn about Jamie's owl wink, his inability to wink, and I cannot wait. I know that Sam has done this kind of for giggles at the LA event, I think.
It was hella funny.
It was cute, but that was like on command or at request. When it's part of the character and you see it, how he's like trying, if you see him as Jamie trying to actually wink and just doing both eyes, I think it could be very funny. They go down to a spring with a pool, and as soon as they get there, he's already undoing her laces. So basically, yeah, the tally here is at least one, because they're into it. They go to town, and as they're almost finished, they are found by two... Well, who knows how long they were watching them?
Gross.
Well, hey, I didn't write this. They are found by two armed redcoat deserters. One puts a musket barrel against Jamie's head, and they pulled Jamie aside so they could take... The intent was to take turns raping Claire, full stop. One's holding Jamie back, and one's about to get on top of, or is on top of Claire. And as he's getting ready to do his thing with Claire, on Claire, Claire looks at on top of her.
Do his thing on Claire.
That sounds worse.
That's what you said.
I know, but his thing on top. Anyway, she looks at Jamie, like, trying to stare holes into his face, or, you know, he's trying to, like, send her thoughts to him, like, don't get us killed, don't control yourself for a little bit longer, I'm gonna do something. So, telepathically, whatever, or just her face, her glass face, she was able to communicate to him, and he gives a very, very small nod that she sees, and they understand each other. And Harry slaps Claire across the face.
Harry being one of the deserters.
Harry being the one doing his thing on Claire. Yes, one of the deserters.
Well, you didn't mention it.
Sorry, it's just a guy came onto the glade. Yeah. Oh, then Harry showed up. You. And then Harry. And then Harry.
His only purpose is to run, jump out and, like, and slap her in the face.
And then walk away.
Harry's such a jerk. I don't like Harry. So,
Harry, the one who was on top of Claire doing his thing. Or about to do it. He didn't actually get to do it. He slaps Claire across the face as she's struggling, but not really struggling against him. She's trying to get to her knife. And she finally gets to her knife, and she allows him to kind of arrange himself, do whatever he's going to do. And she has her dagger in hand. She tries to relax her mind and concentrate on what she has to do, because she just learned her knife skills. That makes me think of a cooking show. Right.
Not different. Those are completely different knife skills.
Knife skills. Those knife skills
will not come in handy for this purpose.
Come on, Claire. Give us your best. What is it? Mirepoix?
Mirepoix.
Okay. So Claire was remembering, okay, from how to do it from the front, how to do it from the back. And how to stab someone from the front.
I was like, how to stab someone
from the back. And she realizes that he's so, it's going to sound bad when I say it, he's so up, all up on her, in her. No, not in
not
her.
In not in her. This is a terrible conversation.
He's so close to her that she's not going to be able to get the knife between them. So she's going to have to stab him up the back. Through the back.
Through the ribs. On his back. She has to go like
up
under the
she has to come out from
the
back direction.
What?
To come at him from the back. From behind?
No!
She has to stab. She wants to aim for his
kidneys. She has to stab his back.
Or his kidneys. kidney. Yeah, can't hit two with one. Anyway, she has to go
with a really long knife, side to side.
Well, what I think is stop. Okay. What I think is clever for her to think of is that she knows she has to stab his back. She can't stab him through the front. We get that. But she thinks, you know, well, I've got to keep him still enough to stab him in the back so he can't get away. So she does the opposite of what most people do in that situation where they try to push them away from them. She, like, wraps her arms around him and her legs around him and holds him still so she has a better chance.
The legs came more into play the second time she stabbed him. So first she stabs him and she, like, hits a rib and her whole arm. Diane does not say her arm went numb.
But like reverberated or?
Kind of, yeah, exactly. The shock went through her arm and she felt it all the way up. And then she realized she was going to have to do it again. And this time she wraps her legs around him to hold him there. And then she comes up and hits the kidney. And she knew that she had done it correctly the second time. And he kind of was limp, kind of like a death throes.
She did it with the first one. She says, I whipped my left arm around his neck to hold him close.
His arm, but not his legs.
Holding the knife hand high.
Yes.
And then the shock of the impact reverberated up her arm. And then he yelped and tried to get away.
And she wrapped her legs around
him. And then she left her. Yes, you're
right. Yeah. And so so she stabs him the second time and got his kidney, and he ends up, he dies.
Correct.
And then she looks up, and she realizes that Jamie had not been lazy either. The moment he got the chance, he had taken his skin-doo, and sliced, what's the guy's name? Since we said Harry.
There's Arnold.
Arnold. I don't even know why they have names, but okay.
Because they talk to each other and call each other by name.
Oh, okay. So Arnold's throat was slashed, and he's, like, on the ground, gone. Jamie carries Claire away from the scene, and then they almost collapse together onto the grass a little bit away. And she reaches for him, and he looks at her like he's never seen her before, and he pulls her to him with a sound between a groan and a sob. And then they go to town, fiercely. And Diana describes it as an act of necessity and not one of love. And after this, Jamie tells her he's sorry. He did it. He should never have used her that way after that thing, what had just happened. And Claire I guess Claire basically says, it's okay, I understand. She's basically saying, don't worry about it. But she really didn't get a chance to truly reply. Because at this point, Dougal comes over to them and is like, it's all fine, you want to be with your wife and all, Jamie. But if you guys go off for so long and don't tell anyone where you are, and it's dangerous, and things can happen. And Claire loses her shiz. Claire is on...
Well, because what he says is, he says, that could get you in trouble one day, laddie, why someone could come up behind you and clap a pistol on your head before you knew it. That's when Claire loses it.
Yes. So Claire is like,
That's pretty much what just happened.
And she loses it, and of course, in shock and hysteria, and we've been in situations where... We don't need to go into detail, but we've been in situations, or maybe me. We both have been in situations that have been potentially life-threatening. Ended up not being.
Obviously.
But my response was hysterical laughter. I have hysterical laughter. It has happened more than one occasion. And this is what Claire, although it was funny what he said, seeing as what happened, but I think it was, and she says, that it was the shock and her picture of, in her mind, her picture of Jamie's face as that happened, and it was just too much, and she just went a cackling. So I just love it that she's laughing so much, holding her sides and crying, and she has a handkerchief in her mouth.
That's just awkward.
It is awkward. Is it a clean one? Does it have nasty bits on it?
Nothing there is clean.
That's true.
Everything is dirty. Somebody's probably used it to blow their nose.
And I wrote in caps, this scene better be in there, darn it. Well, if not, I mean, I guess it's not required by the storyline, but...
But it is. It's required to show Claire's progression as a character. That's true.
If you're going to have a knife lesson, you got to have time for her to use it. Right. And truly, I mean, we're not experts in the TV film industry, so we couldn't say that something that took us, you know, 2 minutes to read won't take 3 hours to film. Of course.
No, but you also have to
think... But it's quick-ish.
You have to think that generally with the way the TV series on Stars and or, you know, other paid premium channels go, there's usually a little bit of sexy time in every episode.
Oh.
So this... This would probably qualify as the sexy time for this episode, even though it's not remotely sexy, really, when you think about it. I think that, you know, if there's a quota for each episode, this would be the quota for that episode.
So, now that she recovers herself and they join the others.
Because now she's traumatized and doesn't ever want
to be alone again. Yeah, or be around. Oh, I wouldn't either. And so now she's nervous about leaving the traveling party at all. And she finds herself eager to see and hear these Mackenzie men. And finds their snores reassuring. Again, totally against, not against, totally almost opposite what she had been like in the beginning. You know, being surrounded by the snores and the men. And over time, we do see that she has become accustomed to it and now finds it comforting. Or began, even before this point, to find it comforting. She became acclimated to it. But now it's become like a safety rather than just, right. Oh, I like this. It's comfortable. Now it's like, oh, I like this. I want this. It means I'm safe.
I need this.
I'm safe.
Yeah.
And she's also lost the rest of her self-consciousness about going to town with Jamie next to any Tom, Dick, or Harry.
No, because, you know, they'll protect her. Or Arnold. They'll protect them.
That's true. So the day came
it's like having a spotter.
The day came that Jamie was to go meet with Horrocks, and Claire was not going to stay behind in her mind. And they go back and forth and back and forth, and he plans to leave Claire behind, quote, in a small copse near the bend of the road. It's thick and grassy, and there's water nearby, unquote. End quote. Good grief, unquote. So they go back and forth with each other, and finally, Jamie threatens to tie her up if she won't obey, and she obeys and gets off her horse and walks into the copse. That makes me laugh for several, that's funny to me for some reason. So then Jamie says some very ominous words. If you leave the copse before I come for you, I'll tan your bare arse with my sword belt. Don't forget that line.
No one will. No one has.
So after a bit, Claire goes, so he leaves her, and she agrees to stay behind. She's not very happy. So after a bit, Claire goes for a little walk, and she finds the small burn, and she notices a crow flying above her, and she wondered if it's true that crows always flew due north. And she realizes that she knew where she was, and that she had exactly the opportunity she had been wanting, that she'd been waiting for so long. I guess 7 weeks. Sorry. If it was 6 weeks and they got married, it hasn't been more than a week or two since they've been married, so maybe 2 months. She was approximately seven miles from the stones and from Frank. And even as she's leaving, or getting ready to make her way to these stones...
Well, she was trying to rationalize that Jamie was going to be okay without her.
Oh, sure. But even as she's leaving and she's made the decision that, okay, I'm going to go.
Right.
She's... still, the thought of Jamie sharing Leary's bed makes her upset.
Well, because I think that she thinks, oh, well, he'll just go back. Oh, and there's that girl. So he'll just probably get together with that girl since they're both going to be available now. But then her thinking about that
is, well, I don't think I like that much.
Brings the...
I actually kind of like the guy.
The jealousy bug back into play.
And so she's... But she still goes on. She's making her way along the water... And then onto the rocks, and from rock to rock. And then she slips into the water up to her, like, up to her skirt or so. And then she takes some of her shoes and socks off and holds her skirt up and hikes her skirt up and actually does a good job of making her way. But then she says she gets a little...
Well, here's the thing. The colder her feet get,
yeah,
the harder it is to actually control the muscles and to grip with them. So every time she slips into the water, regardless of how shallow it is, it's getting harder and harder for her to continue on the same path that she's done.
So eventually, I think Claire or Diana described her as being a little bit, not cocky, but too sure of herself in her pattern now that she had become more successful in navigating these rocks. That she finds this routine, but then oversteps or understeps or misjudges and she falls bodily into the cold water, and she sinks into a deep part of a pool that's, I guess, deeper than just the regular part of the stream, and all of her clothing is just pulling her down and weighting her down. She has no chance, and she is struggling. She struggles for a bit, and then she realizes, hey, if I stop struggling, I will eventually, you know, in a few seconds, get to the bottom. It can't be that deep, and then I can just
push
off and, you know,
can't be too deep, and I'll come up and I'll at least have a fair chance of getting some air. And I can do that a few times.
Toward the shore.
Yeah, well, first to come up anywhere.
Right.
And then making your way toward the shore. And so she does this, and she gets closer to the shore, and she's putting her hands out blindly, just trying to grab onto any kind of bush or tree, anything, a branch, anything she can feel coming from the shore direction.
She saw something red, which yes. she assumed was a tree of some kind.
And then as she's reaching out, and she's, you know, still...
disoriented.
Very disoriented, still trying not to drown, something grabs her hand, and... she realizes, or she sees, that it's another hand. And she looks up, and she recognizes the hand belonged to Corporal Hawkins, who was the assistant, or the corporal, of BJR. And as I wrote, oopsie. I use that word a lot sometimes. Okay, so that is the end of chapter 20 of our discussion. Is there anything in here that... I mean, I kind of went through what happened, and we did chat... off the cuff.
You know, I kind of feel like this is kind of like we've almost reached, because there's so many like ups and downs where it's like you kind of work your way, it's like a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. You work your way towards a peak in the story, and then it's like, and then you can't put the book down, and it's like all downhill for a while, and then you kind of do another. And this is, we're at one of those points. Like, this, there's about to be some like major
fallout
stuff that's about to happen. So it's interesting.
There's a mate, well, again. Yeah. There's, it is, and.
Oh, and I also want to say that they mentioned that freaking water weed again.
I do. Claire mentioned, in the middle of her almost drowning, she remembers Jamie saying she was slippery as water weed, and she was, I think, when she was grabbed onto the stones and they were slick, the algae was slick, and I think that's what she first thought of, and that, I definitely did not laugh. I just thought, oh, goodness.
Well, because she says, slippery as water weed. That's what Jamie said about my dot, dot, dot. You can just keep your dot, dot, dot to yourself, Claire.
Oh, that's wonderful. So,
that is the end of our read-along for this week for chapters 19 and 20.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
Last night, that my young